thank you for taking the time to listen to this life-changing message from the Ministry of Faith Bible Chapel. We hope this message will encourage you in all parts of your life. At the end of this message, you will hear more information on how to contact our church family, as well as directions for you to visit us for any of our worship services. Until then, join us for the service in progress.
So there were two guys that were hunting, and they came upon this huge hole. And one of the guys said to the other one, "Whoa, how deep is that thing?" And the other guy says, "I don't know, let's see." So he looks around and finds a big rusty old anvil sitting nearby, and he drags it over and heaves it into the hole. Whoosh! The anvil goes whistling its way down the hole. The guys don't even hear it hit the bottom. The hole is so deep. The next thing the hunters know, they hear a rapid clippity-clop, clippity-clop, clippity-clop approaching, and a goat comes flying towards them, almost knocking them over. Before they can stop it, the goat goes soaring into the air and falls right straight into the hole. A few seconds later, the hunters see an old geezer running towards them. "Becky," the geezer says, crying out, "Becky." The man reaches the hunters and says, "Hey, you fellas seen a goat go by here?" The one hunter says, "Yeah, we did just now. That thing must have been going like 80 miles an hour, and he jumped right into the hole." To which the old geezer says, "That's impossible. I had her chained to an anvil." Pause for laughter. The truth is, do I need to tell you what an anvil is? The truth is that we are more like Becky, that goat, than we know. And this is what I mean. We are tethered, if you will, chained to ourselves. We're tethered to meeting our own needs and taking care of ourselves and making provision for ourselves and focusing our attention and our energy and our care upon ourselves. And our selfishness is like that anvil that is hooked to Becky the goat that we carry through life, and it so often causes us to crash and fall and fail and to fall into those black, deep, bottomless pits and crash and burn. And in our journey with the Lord, as Pastor Jason was talking about earlier, that this process of restoration that he has in place in our lives, as he's restoring us to look like Jesus, there's two or three things that he puts his finger on, not just once and not just twice, but over and over and over again. He takes us through lesson after lesson and continually tries to teach us a couple of things. One of those things is this idea that I call trust, that he wants us to know that as his children, as his adopted children, that we can trust him, that we can lay all of our lives into his hands, and that no matter what the situation, the circumstances are on the outside and around us, we can lay our lives confidently in his hands. And so constantly he's putting his finger on those areas in our lives and pushing us, if you will, to the edge of craziness and faith and strengthening our faith muscle and proving to us that as our Father and as our God, he can do anything. And that's one area. And then the other area, this idea that we're going to focus on more tonight, is this idea of dying to self or selfishness, where he continually puts his finger on those areas where we get to die to ourselves. And I see it often, especially working in marriage and family, because it's in those areas of relationship where those rough edges of who we are get rubbed off, whether we want them to or not. And especially in marriage, marriage is the perfect relationship for all of our lives, where the spouses come together and they rub each other like sandpaper in a good way. And they rub off that selfishness that is who we are. And God uses it to cause us to be disconnected from that tether of selfishness. And I believe that this is one of God's great goals in our lives, is to cause us to get our eyes off of ourselves and on others and on Him, to cast our vision away from us and our hurts and our needs and our everything that we so easily focus on and that we so easily go to, that our gaze would be up to Him and out to others, not focused on ourselves, but laying our lives down like He has done for us. That example that Jesus has actually physically done for us. And Jesus said in Matthew, He said very clearly this idea, He said to His disciples, I didn't come to be served. That's not why I'm here. Though I really could be, because I'm God. I'm the Son of God. I'm the Messiah. I could be that could be my whole motive, but that's not my motive. My motive for being here is to serve others. And so we see this in Jesus' example, and then He spends the rest of our lives in this process of restoration trying to teach us that same principle, that same quality, that our eyes wouldn't be on us, that our eyes would be on Him, and then our eyes would be on others in a way that we would honor others that are around us. I guess it was my, bless you, that was a good one. I guess it was my senior year of college, and was dating a girl that was 3 years older than me, and I was crazy about her because I felt like I had actually scored big time. She was older than me, she was tall and beautiful, and kind of everything that I thought I ever wanted, and certainly everything I needed, right? And we dated a few months. I don't really remember how long it was. And then at the end of that, we broke up. I think I actually broke up with her, but it was more of her pushing me to break up with her, so I did it. And then I was miserable. And I was beyond miserable. I was mourning. I was living with Pastor Roger and his wife Lee at the time, and I was just going through this process of mourning to the point of I couldn't function. I couldn't work. I couldn't study. I couldn't go to school. I just was moping around, just decapitated. And I remember I would get together with Roger once a week, and we would sit down to pray, and he was asking me, how am I doing, and how's things, and I'm dying here. I can't function. I don't know what I'm going to do. I can't seem to get past this person. And he said to me something that I'll never forget and that I've put into action over and over again in my life and that I've shared with others. He said, you need to find somebody else who's hurting worse than you are or who's in a worse situation than you are, and you need to reach out to them. And I remember at the time thinking, great, thanks a lot. But I took his advice. I'm not even sure now why I took, but I took his advice. And I found a guy. There was a guy that was a part of our college and career group who I was probably 23, 24 at the time. He was in his early 30s. He didn't fit in. He was socially awkward. He wasn't very good looking. He didn't have any friends. He was trying to serve the Lord. He was trying to fit in, but he wasn't. And so I made Rich my project. And I started reaching out to Rich and doing things with him and inviting him to do stuff with us. And something amazing happened. Suddenly, I wasn't focused on myself anymore. Suddenly, those hurts, those pains, that the lack of functionality that I had in my own life because of my own hurt faded away. And not only did that fade away, but it laid the groundwork for me to actually come into a relationship with the Lord. My heart was softened, if you will. And then it gave Jesus a place to come in and say, Mike, you've been playing around with this long enough. Now it's time to really make me the Lord of your life. And I was able to do it. And it was in that season where I wasn't thinking about myself and where I was focused on other people. It wasn't just Rich. There was others that I just started to reach out to. And then that principle became a part of my life. But fast forward then to 2008, Melissa and I, my wife and I, are living in Israel, as missionaries, and I was asked by the International Christian Embassy to travel for them to Central America and to speak in four different countries and to share the message about Israel, and they needed to have kind of some, what would be a good word, they needed some balance in their understanding about what God wanted to do with Israel and with the Jewish people. So I was very excited to go on this trip. I was honored. And I remember spending weeks fasting and praying and asking God just to use me to bless them and to give them wisdom and to give them boundaries and to give them understanding. And then I went on the trip and ended up, one of the countries that I went to was El Salvador. And in El Salvador, I was at this humongous church. It was 10,000 people at this church. And as I came in to minister, it was like at the airport, the red carpet came out, man. And they welcomed me like the king from Israel. And at first I was like, no, I'm just Mike from Israel. No. And they kept puffing me up and rolling out other red carpets everywhere I walked. And if I sneezed, they handed me a Kleenex. And if I was thirsty, they handed me a bottle of water. And they did this a few times, and I'm exaggerating, but that's the way they emulated me and they treated me through this whole short three-day period. And at first I pushed it off, but then, I don't know about you, but it kind of feels good, that stuff. And pretty soon I started feeling pretty strong, and some words would be cocky and arrogant. And then the moment came where they gave me an honorarium. No other country gave me an honorarium as I went on that trip. El Salvador, which is the poorest of the countries, gave me an honorarium. It was the amount of 8 months' worth of salary for an El Salvadorian person. They had told me how poor they were and how much they made. They gave me 8 months' worth of salary. And at first, it bothered me. I was like, I can't take this. This is, then I, back and forth, and I should have just handed it to him. No, I'm not going to take it. Or I should have made a plan instantly what to do with it. But I went back and forth and back and forth. Suddenly, something amazing happened. I was in a place where I thought, you know, I am that speaker of great honor that came all the way from Israel, that sacrificed so much to be here. And all of those red carpets were probably there for a good reason. And so I probably need to take, and I took the money. And I'm embarrassed to say it now. But I learned two significant, very profound truths through these two events in my life and looking at these sequences of events. And one of them is this, that we as human beings are severely selfish. We are so selfish. We're crippled with selfishness, and like Becky the goat, it follows us everywhere we go. It's attached to us on the foot. It happened in the fall, and we were born with it as part of our human nature, and everything about our lives is about us. That's our story as human beings. And the other thing that I learned is that our selfishness, which is severe, fades and vanishes as we get our eyes off of ourselves and we look up at who God is, our worthy, amazing God, and we take our eyes off of ourselves and we put them on other people and recognize their needs and then work at meeting those needs. See, this is one of those areas where God continually, over and over again, works in our lives. It's not just a one-time lesson and then we're done. He puts his finger there over and over and over again because that chain of selfishness is tethered to our foot. And we carry it with us everywhere we go. And so he continually tries to teach us how to disconnect ourselves from that anvil of selfishness that constantly drags us down. We see this in Jesus' ministry. He puts this idea, both of these ideas, into their priority as top priority. As he points out that our whole goal in life, and what he's trying to teach us over and over, is to learn how to live selflessly for him and for other people. For him and for other people. For him and for other people. And over again, he puts his finger on this area. So Jesus was doing his ministry, and he was turning the world upside down. He was healing blind people and raising people from the dead and totally disrupting the status quo of his time and bringing definition to God's people about who God was and what was important to God and what wasn't important to God. And piece by piece, he's laying out for them the kingdom of heaven. And the spiritual leaders of the time stood and applauded him. Thank you, God. No, they didn't do that. They looked for ways to trip him up. They looked for ways to find holes in his theology, to discredit him, and to throw him off, and to find ways to get him in trouble. And so there's one section in the Gospels where we see they continually send people in mercenaries to go in and to disrupt and to find holes in his theology and his stories. So they send in and they say, so what do you believe about Caesar and about money? Where is your allegiance? And what do you believe, Jesus, about divorce and marriage? And are we going to be married? We'll be married in heaven, right? And this whole time he keeps setting them straight. And then they send in this poor little scribe who says to Jesus, teacher, which command is the greatest command in the law? And he's waiting for Jesus' answer because they're going to pounce on him as soon as Jesus messes up because they know the answer. They didn't really care to hear his answer. They're looking for a way to trip him up. And Jesus so wisely answers, and he says, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the greatest and the most important command. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets depend on these two commands. To love the Lord your God with all your heart and your soul and your mind, to look up. To love your neighbor, those that are around you. And in one gospel, he tells the whole story of the Good Samaritan and who is the neighbor and points out that it's not the person that's living next to you, it's everybody around you, and says that your gaze needs to be out and your gaze needs to be up. When we do these two things, there's no room to look in at ourselves. If we're looking up and we're looking out, we can't look in at ourselves. And we're not attached to that anvil that continually trips us up. And when I think about that question, how do I love myself? Now, I'm going to answer questions about myself, but each one of us is different. But we're really good at loving ourselves. We're really good at it because we know exactly what we want. We know exactly what's going to make us happy. We know exactly what's going to make us feel good and look good and fit in. And so we pamper ourselves. We're good at it. We are experts at it. And so Jesus is saying, in all of your expertness and how you love yourself, love others like that. And the way you know each and every one of your needs and you meet them right on time and without any delay and perfectly meet those needs in a way that makes you comfortable, that's how you need to love other people. That's what this gospel looks like. So tonight, that was our introduction. Tonight, that's what we want to do. We want to look at this idea of being others-centered versus the idea of being self-centered and self-focused, and see that as God's prescription or his antidote for the selfishness that plagues us, that wraps us up in self-consumption. You know, our society especially fights against that in us. As we try to learn how to be selfless, it continually tells us more and more, you need to be more selfish. You need to cover your bases more. You, it's all about you. You are the one that's important. You're the one that should be happy. You're the one that should be content. It's all about you. And the gospel is completely opposite of that and completely different in every part of that. And so we're going to look at this idea of selflessness, and we're going to be using a word that is often misunderstood and misused in our English language. That word is hospitality. And it's interesting, when we examine scriptures, we see even the word, but we see the principle over and over again in stories and in direct commands about being hospitable. You know, there's this beautiful story of Abraham, and he's sitting outside of his tent, and this is in Genesis 18. We don't have time to dissect it tonight, but he's just sitting there, and along come three strangers. And what does he do? He doesn't just say, well, here, you can go over there, and they'll give you some food. He does it. He feeds them, and he waters them, and he feeds their animals, and he waters their animals, and he pampers them like he would do himself. It's a beautiful picture of hospitality and of generosity. But the Bible goes through lots of ways where it spells out for us, it lays out for us this principle of hospitality. It's a godly, biblical principle. And it says that all the law and the prophets, Jesus said, hang on these two commandments, to love God all our heart, our soul, our mind, our strength, and to love our neighbors as ourselves. If we look at the Ten Commandments, I think we're going to pop them up here in just a second. If you look at the Ten Commandments, out of the ten, four of them, the first four, that first set is focused on loving the Lord your God. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make idols. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. And remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Those all focus on honoring God and loving God. And then the next set, the six that follow, are all focused on honoring and loving our neighbor. Honor your father and your mother. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness. And you shall not covet. So we see that the whole Ten Commandments can be chopped into two pieces. Love God with all your heart, your soul, your mind, and your strength. And then love your neighbor as yourself. See, hospitality, this weird English word that gets misused all the time, it's the core of the gospel. It's the heart of the gospel, and it's connected to every action that God has in his repertoire as he deals with us as human beings. It's our story, God's hospitality, as he welcomed us. We were strangers and aliens. We were foreigners. He welcomed us into his family. Not only that, he adopted us into his family. He showed us, and still to today, shows us unending hospitality as he gives us his best, as he meets our needs, as he hears our cries, as he studies us and he learns our ways, and he pours out over and over into our lives his richness. This is his example to us. Because with God, it's all about others. This is God's story with us. It's not about him. It's not about us. With God, it's all about others. When we extend hospitality to others, it's demonstrating our heart. It's demonstrating God's heart and his mind towards others. When we see from the beginning the Jewish people, as they're coming out of Egypt, they're starting a brand new nation, a brand new race of people. And as they come out of Egypt and they're getting ready to start their own nation, God makes this the core, the standard for them as a people, as he says to them that they must always remember, not just remember for a couple of weeks. He says you need to always remember that you also were a stranger and an alien. In Exodus 22, he says, you must not exploit the foreigner, the foreign resident, or oppress him, since you were foreigners in the land of Egypt yourself. See, you were a foreigner before. You can't forget that and what it felt like to be that person. You need to remember that and treat them with respect. Don't take advantage of them, but remember their needs. And in Leviticus 19, he says, you must regard the foreigner who lives with you as the native born, as you do the native born among you. You are to love him as you love yourself, for you were foreigners in the land of Egypt. I am Yahweh your God. Isn't that beautiful? That God prescribed into their culture the foreigner would be welcome. Nobody in the earth was doing that. No other race of people was doing that. If you were a foreigner and you traveled into somebody else's camp, most likely they would kill you. If they didn't kill you, then you were their slave. And God sets a totally different standard because others matter to God. So all throughout the Bible, we see this same principle being taught and written about and expanded upon. And it's God's, our responding to God's love, His love for us, our responding to His love is that loving of our neighbors as ourselves and putting other people first. And it's through this tool, if you will, of hospitality that God teaches us how to be selfless. See, he calls us to be selfless, but then he gives us the tool to do it by commanding us to be hospitable, by commanding us and then showing us an example of what it looks like to be hospitable. And then he goes a little bit further, and in his word we see this in Peter 4. Peter's talking about the end times and what it's going to be like, and he says to the people, now the end of all things is near. Therefore, you need to be serious and disciplined for prayer. Above all, I love that statement, above all, everything else, the most important thing, he says, is that we need to maintain an intense love for one another. So look about the room, look at the people that are around you. Those are the people that God is saying to you, you need to have an intense love for these people that are sitting around you. He's not talking about the people sitting at Starbucks right now, though they are part of the others. He's talking to us in the body of Christ. You need to have this intense love for one another. You need to find a way in these end days, above all else, the most important thing. You know why? Because in the end days, in another place, he says that in the end days, men are going to become selfish in all of their actions. And so we need to fight against that. And we only fight against it by that hard work of putting others first and loving those that are around you intensely and putting them first and finding ways to meet their needs. He goes on to say, be hospitable to one another without complaining. I love that. We're going to talk about it in a second, but he says, be hospitable to one another without complaining based on the gift each one has received. Use it to serve others as good managers of the varied grace of God. If anyone speaks, it should be one who speaks God's words. If anyone serves, it should be from the strength that God provides so that God may be glorified through Jesus Christ in everything. To him be the glory and the power forever and ever. Amen. See, this is the thing. In each one of our lives, God has deposited part of who he is, the gifts that he's deposited in us. We know that from parables that Jesus talked about, the parable of the rich man that goes away and he leaves part of his riches with his servants, and then he expects them to use that. See, each one of us has different gifts, and not just necessarily gift of singing and leading worship like Brandon did tonight. That could be it, but there's multiple layers of gifts, of serving and giving, of being Jesus, of being God to those that are around us. And whether it's worshiping or whether it's putting makeup on the actors that did the play on this last weekend, or whether it's learning how to shovel snow or fixing somebody's car or baking them a cake, we have multiple layers of gifts that God has deposited in us, and then he expects us to use. And so Peter is saying that we need to be hospitable to each other based on the gift that God has put in you. Use that gift to be hospitable. Use those gifts. You don't have to be the singer if you're not the singer. But if you're a baker and you can bless somebody who's going through a hard time, this is your opportunity to do that. The Message version says it this way. Everything in the world is about to be wrapped up, so take nothing for granted. Stay wide awake in prayer. Most of all, love each other as if your life depended on it. Love makes up for practically anything. Be quick to give a meal to the hungry, a bed to the homeless. cheerfully. I love it. Be cheerful about it. Be generous with the different things that God has given you, passing them around so that all get in on it. If words, let it be God's word. If help, let it be God's hearty help. That way, God's bright presence will be evident in everything through Jesus. And then in Hebrews 13, 1 and 2, the author says this very profound statement. He says, let brotherly love continue. Let it continue. Don't neglect to show hospitality. He's challenging us to not let that be neglected, because we're living in a day where it's easy to neglect it, because the world keeps telling us, it's about you, man. You need to be happy. And so we start saying, yeah, I need to be happy. It's all about me. I'm the king here. I'm the most honored speaker from Israel. I'm the one that needs to get all the attention. And we start to believe that lie and go, yeah, it's true. It is about me. And God's word reminds us not to neglect the hospitality. For doing this, some have welcomed angels as guests without knowing it. See, God continually points us, he continually points his people to this idea and to this principle of being others-centered. All throughout his word, we see it over and over again, and he uses hospitality as a tool to help us accomplish this and to take our eyes off of ourselves. In English, the word hospitality, the definition of it literally means it's the friendly reception and treatment of guests or strangers in a warm and generous way. That's the definition of hospitality. Notice who's being treated here. It's not my friends. It's not my family. It's guests and strangers. It's the stranger and the alien. You see, hospitality is literally love of the stranger. It's loving those who nobody else is loving. It's putting somebody else first instead of putting ourselves first. And it's more than etiquette. See, in English, the word hospitality, we've boiled it down to this thing about serving others and etiquette and using the right tableware and decorating your home. That's hospitality. That's not hospitality. That's part of what hospitality is. But that's not hospitality. That's at the heart of hospitality. At its heart, at its core, hospitality is about being a care station for the needs of other people around us. And fundamentally, hospitality is all about strangers. It's not about our friends. It's about the people that nobody else wants to do anything with. The root word for hospitality is this word, hospice. And from that, we get our word hospitality, hospice, hostel, hotel, and hospital. Sorry, I lost my... So what's the next slide up there? Okay, go back one. I thought we had a different slide there. So the word hospital is the Latin root of the word hospital. Literally means... Now, does anybody know what the Latin root of hospital is? It's not has nothing to do with people being sick, has nothing to do with surgery. The root word means a guest chamber, or a guest's lodging, an inn. That's what a hospital is. And so we get this picture of how God views hospitality, and it's where we see the heart of the gospel wrapped up in this word of hospitality. This is where hospitality works its wonder in our own lives. And it helps us, sets us free from this anvil of selfishness that continues to wrap itself around our legs. In this idea of hospital, because, see, we're living in a hard time. The days around us are hard. It's difficult times. And the truth is, it's always been difficult. We live in hard days. We live in a hard world. And what did God do as an answer to that? He sent his son, who came into our lives and changed our lives so that we could be a hospital through hospitality to others. See, people need a hospital. They need a place where they can go, where they're safe, where they find encouragement, where they find unconditional, non-judgmental love, where they're refreshed in their souls, where somebody in this big world, this big hard world, somebody's focused on them, where somebody's meeting their needs, where somebody like Jesus comes into their lives, and no matter who they are or what position in life they hold, they find place of safety and of comfort. You see, our lives are like walking mobile clinics. Everywhere we go, we carry the grace of the Lord with us. We're like a mini hospital. And when we learn to practice hospitality, and when we welcome others in and take our eyes off of ourselves and welcome others in and honor them, we elevate our spirits to a place of Christ-likeness that nothing else can do when we practice hospitality. Our homes become full-scale hospitals where the hurt and the wounded and the rejected and the broken can come and find welcome, where they're no longer strangers and where they're no longer aliens, where they have a place to rest their head, a place where they can be met by Christ and Christ in us. And this is really what the thrust of the Good Samaritan story was. That idea that Jesus was trying to relay to his people and to us today is that we need to be looking for those people on the side of the road, not literally the side of the road, but the side of the road of life, the ones that are broken and hurt and lost and rejected and who nobody else wants anything to do with. We need to be looking at the needs around us in the church and outside of the church, at those people that God's placed into our lives. See, we come to church, as Pastor Jason was saying, not just to focus up, but to focus out as well, and to connect our hearts to the needs of the people that are around us. It's a great challenge to be other-oriented and to see the people that are on the other side of the road. And this is what God calls us to. And he gives us that tool of hospitality. So the question is this: what does hospitality look like? Because I know some of us are sitting there going, well, I don't have that gift of hospitality. But see, we've boiled it down to this idea of hospitality being only somebody inviting us into their home, or us inviting somebody into our home. We set the dishes out really nice, and we use our nicest china and our greatest glasses, and we cook the greatest meal, and that's hospitality. That's not what hospitality is. It can be. But if that's all that it is, it's wrong. So what does hospitality look like? What is it that we're talking about? Is it dinner parties? No. Is it gourmet food? No, but it can be. It might be. Do you have to be a great cook? No, but it doesn't hurt. Do you have to have a lot of money? No. That's the whole point. It's not about money and how much you have. Do you have to have the gift of hospitality? There's no such thing. You see, hospitality isn't a gift. Some people are gifted in it, but if you ask those people how they learned how to do it, they learned brick by brick, piece by piece. They've put it together. How did I learn hospitality? I'm still learning it. How did I learn it? I lived with Roger and Lee Girard for a lot of years. How many years was that? 7 years. And in 7 years, I watched, this is what hospitality looks like. They're king and queen of hospitality. That's what hospitality is. It is. It's not a gift that I was born with or that God somehow graced me with. It's learning. It's practicing. It's using the gift that God has poured into me to bless somebody else. It's a learned, obedient skill. It's an open door policy with my life and with my stuff to other people. It's a generous spirit that extends God and God's gifts to those that are around me to meet their needs and to pour into them. It's a trained eye that looks for the needs of other people. My wife is so good at this. She sees people's needs from thousands of miles away. And then she looks at ways that she can make those needs met. She's amazing at it. It's intentionality when it comes to others and welcoming them into our lives. Because hospitality is dying to ourselves. It's God's tool for teaching us how to become selfless, because it's a sacrifice. And that's why Peter said, love others by being hospitable and don't complain about it. Why would anybody complain about it? Because it's a sacrifice. We have to die to ourselves. We have to put others first. We have to meet their needs and scratch their backs before we scratch our backs. That's what hospitality is. So I want to share with you, as we wrap up tonight, three secrets to hospitality. Number one, be yourself and use your gifts. See, God's deposited in you Him, pieces and parts of who He is, beautiful gifts. And your gift is different than my gift. Be true to who you are. Find two or three things that you're good at and do them over and over and over again. You don't have to do somebody else's gifts. Be true to who you are. Be creative, but pour out who God made you to be. Number two, it's not about you. As we serve other people, it's not about us. It's about them. Don't worry about it's not good enough, or I don't have the ability, or it's not fancy enough or elaborate enough. It's not about size or money. It's about meeting that need. People just love hospitality. They love it when we love on them. Don't make excuses. Don't keep saying, I don't have enough time. I don't have enough money. My house isn't big enough. I don't cook good enough. I don't have good food. My wife and I were really blessed a few weeks ago when Karen and Jeremy invited us into their home on a Sunday after church. We didn't have to cook, and they set out a beautiful meal with homemade cookies. It was wonderful. It blessed us. And in their mind, I don't know how you guys saw it, but it's a lot of work that goes into that. And maybe they were thinking, oh, it's not good enough. It's the pastor from the church. We have 1,000 excuses. Don't listen to those excuses. Just do something, because love is simple. Love is simple, and people just want to be loved and to have their needs met. The third one, hospitality is a learned practice. It isn't a gift. When people say they have the art or the gift of hospitality, it ends up being more about them than it is about the one that's being blessed or the one that's receiving. And we just saw it's not about us. It's a learned expression of God's love through us to others. It's training ourselves to be that hospital that people need, training our eyes to see the needs of other people. So here are some practical suggestions. And because there are numerous needs around us, we could go on all night long, but I promise you I'm not going to do that. I only have 5 or 7 pages here. See, I had to pause for the laughter there. That was good. Have that in my notes. Here are some practical suggestions. Host a birthday party or a baby shower for someone who doesn't have family in town or friends in town to acknowledge this milestone in their lives. Take a meal to a family who they've just newly arrived in town, or they have a newborn baby, or maybe they're going through surgery or chemo treatments, or maybe they've just returned from a long trip and their home is empty of food. Take them a meal. Take care packages to homeless people or people that are out of work. Leave sympathy notes to those that have lost their spouse or a family or a friend. And remember them on the year anniversary and encourage them in God's love for them. Leave notes of encouragement. Someone who's struck with grief. I don't know. Maybe it's because I am a pastor, but I know a lot of people struck with grief. We have great, ample opportunities to meet that need. Leave them a note of encouragement. Leave a note of encouragement to a new college student or new moms the first time that they're mothering, a new employee at a new job. Host new church members. This is a big one. If the church did that, if we did that, if just this room did that here at Faith Bible Chapel, it would change the face of our church. If we looked every Sunday for somebody new that we didn't know, invited them over to our home, even if our home is small or even if we don't cook real good, but we have one meal we can do that is good, invite them in. It's going to change the complexion of who we are as a church. And it's not just a suggestion, it's a command from the Lord to get our eyes off of ourselves. Help an unexpected teen mother with childcare, with notes of encouragement, with baby necessities. And we could go on and on. The needs are endless. But the point is that we each have gifts that God's invested into our lives that we can meet each one of those needs. Not all of them, but as a group, we can meet those needs. We have the great opportunity to meet those needs. So let's wrap this up and just say that Jesus said about himself, this was his last kind of ringing statement about himself. The Son of Man didn't come to be served, though he could have because of who he was, but he came to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. See, hospitality is God's gift to us to use for the kingdom of God. It's that tool that allows us to detach ourselves from that selfish anvil that wrecks our lives over and over and over again. Hospitality is God's avenue to give us the opportunity, the avenue to give us the opportunity to meet other people's needs. And as we take that and as we learn and we practice hospitality, we change the world forever. And so I want to encourage us tonight, if you're here and you've been thinking all night, oh man, this is going on in my life, and oh, how am I going to deal with that, and I don't have any money, and can I encourage you this? I'm going to leave you with Pastor Raj's words to me. Find somebody else that is in worse shape than you are. Guarantee it's not going to be hard. And you begin to minister to them. You begin to meet their needs. You highlight what their needs are and you find a way to meet them. Or you find others that have the ability to meet them. And suddenly those things that are consuming your heart and that seem overwhelming in your own life, I guarantee you they're going to fade. Because that's the key. God's key, his antidote to the selfishness in our own hearts.
We hope that this message has spoken something personal to you. If you would like more information about our church family or service times, please call us at 303-424-2121 or visit us at our website, www.fbci.org. Faith Bible Chapel currently meets in our Family Worship Center, located on the corner of 62nd Avenue and Ward Road. We'll be right back.